if you like betting on golf. But everyone that you back misses the cut. Get some experts involved with all the stats and the tips and so much more. 'Cause it's the golf betting system. The golf betting system is the golf betting system podcast.
Greetings and welcome to the Golf Betting System podcast 228. This is our 2022 BMW PGA Championship Tips podcast. Paul Williams and Barry O'Hanrahan join me, Steve Bamford, discuss our selections for this week's DP World Tour action from Surrey. Good morning, gents.
Morning, guys.
Morning, guys.
Please subscribe to this podcast as you drive the popularity of the show. This podcast is for listeners of 18 and above. Please be gamble aware. You can visit begambleaware.org for more info. And of course, please bet responsibly. Visit our world famous golf betting system website. We have got a real quality suite of data this week for the BMW PGA. We've got Paul's in-depth betting preview. We've got tournament strokes gained analysis from Wentworth. That there is a unique piece of work. Tournament form stats. We've got form charts, including combined course and current form. And of course, there is the DP World Tour Predictive Optimizer. All of these features, like this podcast, are all completely free of charge with no paywall. We're available on Twitter. If you want to follow Barry, he's at A Good Talk Golf. Paul is at Golf Betting. I am at Bamford Golf. Subscribe to the Steve Bamford Golf YouTube channel, where this podcast is available, along with my weekly golf betting show. I pulled together a special Wentworth edition for the channel. Right, it's five-star review time. We could do with some more. So if you're sitting at home twiddling your fingers, send us a five-star review on Apple Podcasts, iTunes, please. That would be most appreciated. As ever, for those of you who leave a review, I will read them out at the start of a future show. Leave your name and where you are in the review. If you remember from last week, I did actually mention that this review was from a gent on the Isle of Wight. It's Rod. Oh, yeah. Good morning, Rod, if you're listening to this in the morning. This is a must listen. It's five stars. Love my golf betting. And since listening to this pod, I wait to make my weekly PGA bets until I hear the broadcast. The course breakdown and analysis is top notch and really helps my decision making. And I always feel reassured when the players I'm considering are on these guys' shortlists. We'll definitely be taking a closer look at their website and tools that are on there. Thank you, Rod. Much appreciated.
Lovely stuff. Yes, thanks for taking the time to write us that review, Rod. Much appreciated.
Cheers, Rod. I think the key point there is the shortlists, because oftentimes we drop one off at the last minute and that could be the one that hits.
Mm. Yeah. Shortlists can be particularly long, can't they?
You two were into Theodor Bjorn Olsen.
Yeah, it didn't quite work, that one, did it?
That one didn't work.
Didn't quite work.
Oh, I stayed off the Thunder Bear. I got Helikilda was so close.
Yep.
Can you pronounce that for me? Yeah, Todd Drake
from the I'm going to go with yes. I nailed it.
Go on. Do it again.
I'm not so sure.
This is my reference, not yours. Helikilda, is it? Is that right?
Steve, it's just, I don't think a native Dane could have said it better, so.
Oh, he was there in the mix, wasn't he? But it came down to Oliver Wilson. That guy loves winning at ridiculous prices, doesn't he? Mm. But as you said, Paul, you were talking about coastal courses and Himmerland. And he's won, didn't he win the, the Dunhill Links at like 600-1 a few years ago?
It was, 2014. So what's that? Best part of 8 years since his last win. But yeah, he won the Dunhill Links at some obscene price. And then 200-1 last week, if you could have plucked him out, which, I don't know, there's tiny little nuggets here and there you could have latched onto, I suppose, if you'd have wanted to. But I didn't see a plethora of winning slips on my timeline on Sunday, so I'd suggest that he was a skinner for the bookies, I'd imagine. But yeah, first win for 8 years. Hold a couple of absolute monsters on the back nine as well. Couldn't buy a putt to begin with, and then held a couple from 60 feet or there or thereabouts, and held off Ewan Ferguson. Oh, Ferguson's looking like a real player, isn't he? That would have been his third win of 2022 if Wilson hadn't have found those putts. One in Qatar, one at Gowgorm Castle, didn't they, a few weeks back? And yeah, nearly won again, but couldn't deny Ollie Wilson. And I guess you look at the outpouring on Twitter from his peers. There was a lot of congratulations, a lot of very, very positive vibes there. So a popular guy and a popular win within the professional ranks by the looks of it. So if any of you guys did manage to pluck Oliver Wilson out at 200-1 or thereabouts, then very well done last week. I certainly wasn't anywhere near him, sadly. So we'll have another go this week.
We will. I don't want to talk about last week or talk off piece for too long, because Wentworth's clearly one of the biggest tournaments of the year over here in the UK. What I did want to do, I've pulled together a list, because the PGA Tour starts next week. I just wanted to make some of the listeners aware of players that have managed to get themselves off the Corn Ferry and will be playing PGA Tour golf next season. I haven't listed all 50 just to just to allay your fears that I'm going to be sitting here for 10 minutes reading out 50 names, but I've pulled out some notables. So regular season, these are guys that have been promoted from the regular season. Benny Am, MJ Daffy, Marty Du. That's the Chinese guy. He had a year on the tour before.
Yeah, Marty Du Zicheng.
That's him. Harry Hall. Michael Kim. There's another South Korean coming in, Seong Kim. He looks like a talent. An absolute brute of a player who's I've had my eye on for a long time, Taylor Montgomery. Robbie Shelton's back. Justin Suh. Now, he won the Corn Ferry final last week. I can remember him playing quite a few without any status and actually doing quite well, Justin Suh. Davis Thompson is back for another year. And Carl Yuan, he actually headed the regular season points on the Corn Ferry. Chinese guy, 25-year-old. And then from the playoffs, a lot more familiar names in here. So these are all players that have effectively improved their status on the PGA Tour. So they would have been 126 and lower in the FedEx Cup last year. They'll now have better status as a Corn Ferry grad. Ryan Armour. You love a bit of Ryan Armour, don't you, Paul, on Bermuda grass? Joseph Bramlett, one of the best drivers on the PGA Tour, but the rest of his game isn't very good. Dean Burmester, he moves across from the Corn Ferry, the South African. Austin Cook, Thomas Dietrich is another DP World Tour mover. We've got Austin Eckroat, Bryce Garnett, Mr. Paspalum himself, he'll be playing the PGA Tour again next season. Michael Gligic. Will Gordon. He actually headed the playoff rankings of the three tournaments. Will Gordon. I can remember Will Gordon. An absolute beast with the driver.
Yeah, he won the first event, didn't he?
He did, you got it. We've got another DP World Tour player, but this one's from a few years ago. Tano Goya, the Argentine. He's made it onto the tour.
It's a blast from the past, isn't it?
Yeah, Tano Goya. We then got Nick Hardy, who was going off at 25-1 in some events last year and didn't even make the top 125 in the FedEx Cup. Nick Hardy, Scott Harrington, David Lingmuth is back after winning a couple of weeks ago. Ben Martin's another blast from the past. He almost won the Puerto Rico Open last year, or this year rather. Henrik Norlander, he actually found the putter, managed to make some putts and get it back onto the PGA Tour. Matty Schmid, he's going to go across from the DP World Tour. And last but not least, our old friend, Brian Stewart. A PGA Tour season can't be a PGA Tour season without Brian Stewart in every field each week, can it? Scraping around for those top 25s.
Yeah, and a few DP World Tour boys, as you said, have already made their way across, haven't they?
Burmester, Dietrich, Schmid. Harry Hall as well, that talented English guy.
Mm. Yep.
There was also one that I forgot to list on here, Ben Taylor. He's another English guy. He did a full season before last, didn't create any waves. He's fought his way back onto the main tour as well, Ben Taylor. Very neat and tidy sort, Taylor. So yeah, I just thought I'd bring that out because we've got a little bit more time on the show this week as we will next week when we've got two events to go through. So I would expect pretty much all of those players to be in next week's field at Silverado in California, the first PGA Tour event of the 22-23 season.
Yep.
Right, let's talk Wentworth. Looks like a cracking field pool, it has to be said. You know, McIlroy at the top with John Rahm. We've got US Open winner Matt Fitzpatrick, Shane Lowry, Victor Hovland, and last year's defending champion Billy Ho Horschel. With then Scott, Hatton, Fleetwood, before we get to the Livsters, Taylor Gooch, Abraham Anser, Patrick Reed. They're hanging 45-1 on Patrick Reed at Bet365 right now.
Yeah. Oh, there's a lot of prices out there this week, just because of the nature of the way that the week sets up, I guess.
I don't remember such a good field at Wentworth for a few years. I might be wrong. Tell me if I am.
No, I think you tend to get one or two of the guys near the top, don't you? So, you know, Rory has supported it in the past and Rahm has played in the past. Shane Lowry tends to play most years, doesn't he? But you tend to have a kind of smattering of players come across. But there certainly seems to be one or two more than a regular season. So that's good. And it's good to see some of these guys coming over and supporting the DP World Tour when... Well, I wouldn't say everything's up in the air because it's not quite, is it? But, you know, you've got this ongoing live situation, how that's potentially going to affect the DP World Tour over the next few months and years. And it's good to see some of the bigger names come over and support it. And also next week as well, we've got the Italian Open next week. And a good chunk of these players are sticking around. So next week you've got Rory's playing the Italian Open, Matt Fitz is playing, Hovland, Hatton are both playing, Francesco Molinari. So you've got a very good quality Italian Open next week as well, even though that's going to be a peg or two down in terms of the stature of the actual event itself. This one, it's the penultimate Rolex Series event of the season. So it is a full $8 million or whatever the prize fund is nowadays for the Rolex Series. And as you said, Steve, one of the highlights of the season, it was always the DP World Tour, the European Tour's flagship event of the season. I guess they've tried to change that position and make the DP World Tour Championship at the end of the season the absolute big one. But this one's always one I look forward to, and I'm sure many of the listeners do as well. As you said, quality field 14. If you count them through, there's 14 of the world's top 50 players in attendance, which is a pretty good show for a DP World Tour event. Give you a taste of some of the prices. Rory is 6-1. Of course, he bagged all the cash at the FedEx Cup a couple of weeks back, didn't he? John Rahm 8-1. Matt Fitz is 12s. Shane Lowry 18-1. Victor Hovland 20-1. Last year's winner, Billy Horschel 28-1, exactly the same price as he went off last year. Adam Scott, Tyrrell Hatton, Tommy Fleetwood all 30s right now. Talor Gooch 33-1. 40-1 bar those players that I've just read through. But there's stacks of players out there in three figures you could make a bit of a case for. Aaron Rye, three-figure chance. Tristan Lawrence, who's been going off at, 20-25-1 thereabouts over the last few weeks. Yeah. Available at three figures. Adrian Aus, Rasmus Højgaard, Victor Perez is available at three figures as well. Loads of value if you want to dig down the field a little bit this week. And, of course, with no PGA Tour action, that's where all the focus of the bookies have been. So Boyle Sports have gone 10 places each way. Loads of firms, 7 or 8 places each way. And, of course, as we've been saying for the last few weeks, Bet365 have their each way extra proposition available for this. 8 places each way, a fifth of the odds seems to be where a lot of the punters go, because the prices tend to mirror their standard market, but you get in 8 places and a fifth of the odds. Well, it mirrors it there or thereabouts. But you can choose up to 12 places each way. And again, as I've done the last couple of weeks, I've put an explanation of how that all works on my preview this week. So if you're intrigued, then come through, have a read and see what you think. But there's certainly a lot of options and certainly a lot of good each way terms out there this week for the PGA or BMW PGA.
Go on, Steve. Some of the Bet365 prices yesterday were outrageously good. Mm. I mean, you got 33-1 on one of your top selections, and he was as short as 20-1 with other firms.
Yeah.
And you're getting 8 places each way on the each way extra.
Absolutely, yeah.
That's mad.
You know, there was a time you'd look at the Bet365 prices, and they were typically best price on most players, but you were getting 5 places a quarter of the odds, so you kind of knew what you were getting. But the way they price up this each way extra market is very, very similar to the standard market. Incidentally, their standard market this week is 6 places and a quarter of the odds, so you're getting an extra place anyway. But yes, well worth a look, because in comparison to the vast majority of bookies, their 8 places market is superior. So
I will put a link, Paul, in the podcast description through to their new customer offer. Bet £10, get £50 in free bets.
Cool.
Because I do think, if you haven't got a Bet365, there aren't many people, but if you are one of the few that hasn't got a Bet365 account and you're a regular with golf bets, you need to have an account right now for this each way extra facility. Because you and I and Barry, we're using it more and more and more just because of the great balance of, you know, additional places and top prices. So I'll put a link in the description for the listeners.
Splendid. Yes. So, yeah, that's the market. In terms of the course itself, I guess it doesn't need a massive amount of introduction. We're playing the West Course at Wentworth. It's a Harry Cole original. Lots of tweaks in relatively recent times from Ernie Els predominantly. 2009 and then again in 2016 to correct some of those 2009 changes that weren't overly well received. It's a classical tree-lined heathland track, 7,267 yard par 72. Newly laid bent grass greens, or they were newly laid when they did the renovation in 2016. And of course you've got this pair of closing par fives, which is part of the heritage and the kind of iconic part of Wentworth, which many punters and viewers will remember. I guess if you look at the changes that Ernie Els made, if anything, the most recent set of changes softened the track a little bit. So we've seen the winning scores get a little bit deeper under par since that most recent set. But it seems to be much more kind of universally accepted as a good set of changes. So I'm sure that will be how we sit for a few years now. And certainly the greens are much, much better. And there's times gone by when we've seen the greens in pretty poor state. But when we've been there over the last few years, me and you, Steve, and Barry, when you came over, the course itself looked pretty immaculate and the greens were absolutely spot on. So anyway, there's loads of history, loads of stats to check out on the stats pages on the site. So do have a look through. You've got history going back all the way to 2002. As Steve said, there's also some strokes gained stats from the years that have been captured here so far. And of course, as we go on over the next few years, those will all build up, particularly on the DP World Tour. When we get to the Fortinet next week, actually, we've got a full extra year of data in there. So that goes back to the end of the 2015 season, so or the 2015-2016 wraparound season. So we've got quite a few years of PGA Tour strokes gained data coming through now, which is good. Anyway, back to Wentworth. In terms of the weather, we've had a really dry summer over here in England, but it's started to break recently. We had a lot of rain overnight on Sunday, a bit more rain overnight again last night on Monday, and there's potential for more up to and including on Thursday. Potential for thundery showers could be quite heavy. So it may well soften the course up a bit. Had there been no rain from Sunday onwards, I'd have said it was going to play particularly firm, but I'm not sure it will now because we've had some good rain and we've got more to expect as well. So it may well soften it up, and that may well make it even more scoreable, particularly when you look at the wind forecast, which apart from Thursday where it might get to 10 or 12 miles an hour, other than that, you're talking 5 to 10 miles an hour wind, which really isn't much around Wentworth. Temperatures getting up to kind of 20, 21 centigrade, which is touching 70 in Fahrenheit. It should be scorable. I can't see it any other way, really. It's not always been that way. I'll go through some of the recent winners and their winning scores just to give us a flavour. 2010 was Simon Kahn. 6 under par he won at back then in 2010. That was as a 200-1 shot. Came from way off the lead, as I recall, in 2010. Luke Donald won back-to-back titles in 2011 and 2012, 6 under, then 15 under. He was there or thereabouts with the world number one spot at the time. 15-2 he was in 2011, and 8-1 when he followed up the following year in 2012. Matteo Manassero won at 10 under par in 2013. He was a 66-1 shot. Rory won in 2014 at 14 under as a 14-1 shot. 2015 was Benny Ann on debut, 100-1. Now he got to 21 under, so starting to see some variance coming through already in terms of the winning scores. That was before the most recent renovation. From 2016 was Chris Wood 9 under, 66-1. They ripped the course up a bit after Chris Wood's win, so from there on, it's the most current guys in terms of the course setup. 2017 was Alex Noren at 11 under. He was a 20-1 shot. We were on Alex Noren when he scythed his way through the field on the final day with that magical final round that no one could get to. 2018 was Francesco Bollinari, 17 under, 22-1. Danny Willett won in 2019. Now he was a 66-1 shot, 20 under par. Tyrrell Hatton, 2020, he was 19 under. At 16-1. And of course, Billy Horschel, as we already mentioned last year, he was also 19 under and a 28-1 shot. So those last four winning scores, 19, 19, 20, and 17 under par. And I think really that's kind of where we're going to be looking again this week, particularly with the forecast. I can't see it going much other way, really. That should be where you're pitching yourself if you're a player looking to get into contention this week, I think. If you look at stats, traditionally it's been a strong all-round test. The emphasis has always been on long game, having a good long game performance here. As I say, it's certainly softened up a bit, so you need to be able to score as well. But bogey avoidance, scrambling, they're two key elements that you need to pick out, I think, if you're looking for a potential winner. In scrambling in particular, look at Noren. He was fourth for scrambling. Francesco Molinari was first for scrambling. Danny Willett was eighth for scrambling. Tyrrell Hatton was first. Billy Horschel last year, third for scrambling. So last five winners all inside the top eight or better for scrambling. And that's since the most recent set of Ernie Els tweaks.
Really?
It kind of makes sense, doesn't it? You look at that course, you've got to have a strong tee to green game, but you can't be hemorrhaging shots. You've got to make sure that when you miss greens, you're getting yourself up and down, either from those bunkers or from the kind of runoff areas or from around the greens as well. So, yeah, it does make an element of sense, I think, particularly when you kind of walk the course a few times. But, yeah, that's, of all the stats, of the traditional stats, that's the most striking.
That's interesting.
Yeah, I don't think you can go there with a poor short game and get away with it. We've got some strokes gained data, as you say. In terms of the past two winners, both Billy Horschel and Tyrrell Hatton, they both topped strokes gained tee to green, which is, I guess, that's much more what you'd expect in terms of the winning kind of formula around Wentworth. But yeah, if you combine a bit of strokes gained C to green with a decent short game performance, then I think you're gonna be doing rather well around Wentworth. Other bits to pick out. Well, there's a whole list of incoming form from the last 12 winners on my preview. If you pick through that and exclude Simon Kahn back in 2010, every other winner had at least one top 20 finish in his last five starts. So some decent-ish incoming form is not a bad starting point. In terms of course form, now if you exclude Benny Ann back in 2015, he was a debutant. Every other winner, and that includes Simon Kahn back in 2010, every other winner had at least one top 10 finish around Wentworth prior to victory. So getting some decent, getting some a good performance to give you a sight of how this course plays before eventually going on and winning seems to be a decent starting point. So yeah, boil it down. I'm not sure it's ever that easy in golf betting to be able to put all of the factors together and it just pops out a winner. But
let's take a view from Barry because he's barely said anything on this podcast. Are you there? Are you still there, Barry?
I'm hanging around.
He's hanging around. What are your key thoughts on Wentworth having been there with us a few years ago? What kind of player do you think it suits? I mean, for me, I don't think you can be an indiscriminate driver of the golf ball for a start.
No, you certainly don't want to be. Yeah, well, you don't want to be dealing with chopping out from trees and having to manufacture low turning shots to get yourself up in the throat of the green. But when you do have that, that really points into the scrambling side of things that Paul mentioned. So, overall, for me, coming in, like, I'm looking to try find guys who are playing really good golf. I'm not trying to pluck out something unusual or anything like that. It's a course that just asks a lot of questions about all parts of your game, and they need to be on. And if one of them's not on, then you need to have something else in your game absolutely firing really hot. So that, I mean, it shouldn't be. I don't think it is rocket science. I think it's fine guys who are playing well. And maybe not allergic to tree-lined courses.
So potentially a top 10 here helps. And some players that are playing great golf right now. It's pretty simple matrix, really.
Well, you'd like to think so. It's never quite that easy, is it? But yeah. If you to plot the players that have finished top 10, the players that have got a recent enough top 20 finish, those that can scramble and those that have got a strong tee to green game, then you can get yourself down to a pretty reasonable shortlist. You'd hope that of that shortlist, some of those are going to be in contention. And again, just hope that when that's the case, one of them gets over the line on Sunday.
The listeners will be asking right now, who was on your shortlist that you didn't put up?
Well, you know, it's one of these where you could end up, particularly with that mid-range or that longer price position from so many players, that I could have ended up back in 10 or 12, really, but I managed to whittle it down to six. I don't know. We go through the ones I've backed. I'll go for the three that I've backed that are inside 100-1, and we'll get a view from you guys. Yeah. And then I've got three absolute bombs as well. And then if we need to go down the painful route of those that we didn't quite back, then I can give you a view of that. Anyway, if you look at the top of the market, we've talked a little bit about the guys at the top. And Rory, 6-1, he just won Eastlake. If you go back and look at when he won Eastlake before, the following starts, he was second at Crown Saucier in 2019, fourth at the HSBC Champions in 2016. So it's not as if he's fallen off a cliff immediately after in the past. But equally, for a 6-1 shot, he hasn't won immediately afterwards. Now, I know you can't look at the history of these things and take it as an absolute science, because he could just waltz in here and win this golf tournament at 6-1. But he's not always had it his own way, is he, Rory? There's a few missed cuts in there alongside the decent performances, and this whole live situation as well. And, you know, he's been quite vocal about the players that are coming over and playing this week. And I wonder if there's just going to be a little bit of atmosphere is probably the way to describe it that could impact things here. Just a little bit too skinny for me, 6-1. John Rahm, 8-1. I much less likely to have gone with John Rahm than Rory McIlroy. Not had the best of seasons, has he? Beat a poor field in Mexico and only just beat him in Mexico as well. And 8-1 really doesn't represent much value to me. I know
there's no discount there, is there? That's a shocking price, in my opinion.
Yeah, you were saying much the same thing earlier, weren't you? There's not much there, is there? Matt Fitz, I mean, if you're looking for someone who ticks boxes, then he's just an absolute sear green on the data that I did. 12-1, again, you're just looking at the price and thinking, well, there's no juice in there whatsoever. Nothing whatsoever. And he was a bit out of sync at the BMW Championship. Said as much in his interview afterwards. Got his coach involved mid pack at the East Lake final. You know, he may find it. He may pull it all back round. Sometimes after that first major as well, it takes quite some time to get the next win. To come down from that high spot to get your career back online and back on track, and find the motivation, I guess, to go and achieve something bigger and better in the future.
The problem with Fitzpatrick is his approach play. It's poor at the moment. He was 67th out of 68 at the BMW for approach strokes gained.
Right.
And then he got his coach in and he was 23rd out of 29 at East Lake.
Yeah.
I'd suggest you're going to need a lot better approach play around Wentworth than that.
Yeah, and, you know, his short game is outstanding nowadays. He's much improved in terms of his distance off the tee. I never used to have him down as a decent putter, but you watch him putt now and he's a very, very good putter. But if something, you know, as fundamental as approach play isn't quite working when you come to a place like Wentworth, then it could spell a mid-pack finish rather than a contending performance. And if you're picking out a player at 12-1, then I think you're going to want someone who's firing on a few more cylinders than that. So, yeah. Anyway, I've left the three alone at the top. I couldn't go anywhere near those guys. The first one I've backed is Shane Lowry at 18-1. Again, I got him with the 8 places option with Bet365, which seemed to be the best combination out there yesterday. Still available right now as we record at 8 o'clock on Tuesday morning over here in the UK. And we talked about Matt Fitz and potentially his getting his first win since his major championship success. Shane's still hungry for that first win since the 2019 Open. I mean, we've all collectively been on him a number of times this season. He's had some real close calls as well, hasn't he, to get that first win. And I think once he gets that first win again after the Open, after his last success, then I think he'll be back winning quite regularly. Second at the Honda earlier this season, third at the Masters, third at the Heritage, 12th at the BMW Championship last time out. Now, he was trying to qualify for East Lake at the time, as you'll remember, and he fell just short in the end. By his own estimation, going back to the interviews post the end of that, or the final round there at the BMW, he said that he'd played some of his best golf for quite some time, which is encouraging because he has been playing some really good stuff as it goes. So, if by his own estimation he's playing even better, then that's interesting. And returns to Wentworth this week where he usually does contend. I mean, 8 of his last 9 visits have ended up in a top 20 finish here. He's got 4 top 6 finishes overall. He really does love it around these parts. And if there's a player that I think can take one of those top 3 on this week and has the quality to take one of those top 3 players on, then Shane Lowry is that man for me. So quite happy to go in with Shane at 18s. I've also backed Tommy Fleetwood at 33-1. This is the one you alluded to earlier, Steve. Yeah. And that was with Bet365 with their each way extra proposition. He's been nibbled in a little bit. I'm seeing 30-1 out there right now, Tuesday morning, but still a decent price for a player who's twice a Rolex Series winner. We haven't seen him since he finished 4th in back-to-back weeks at the Scottish Open and then the Open Championship. And that was sadly because he lost his mother shortly after the Open. returned home, of course, to spend some time with his friends and family. And that curtailed his FedEx Cup campaign. He had to effectively pull out of the FedEx Cup playoffs at that point, or simply didn't play those events. So we've not seen him since that point. But in the past, you go back, we've seen him win Abu Dhabi twice off similar breaks. So I'm not particularly concerned about rust. He seems to be getting back into the swing of things in terms of practice. Sixth here in 2015, also contended in 2018 up to the halfway point where he was fourth, contended in 2020 as well. He was fourth going into the final day there. So it seems to be getting closer and closer around Wentworth. And really, that should be a tee to green test that should suit his game, I think. And certainly was finding some good form with his long game before sadly having to take that enforced break. And again, we've talked about Tommy a few times over the course of this season and you know, what was going right and what was going wrong with his game. But I thought we started to see some real sparks and some real signs of life with his long game in particular, which when he's playing well, of course, that is his absolute strength. He stacks the greens in regulation, which is never a bad thing around Wentworth. Strokes gained tee to green, absolutely his game. So if he can bring that to the party this week, then then I think he can go particularly well this week. The other one I've backed under three figures is Eddie Pepperell. Now, you two all know, and anyone who listens to these podcasts will know that I've been backing Eddie off a cliff over the last few weeks. I've backed him with three of his last four starts, all of them at shorter prices than this. 80-1 with eight plays as I got this week. I simply can't leave him out this week. There's no justification in my mind to be backing him at shorter prices. And then he turns up here on a course, again, that I think he can do particularly well at, has played well here in the past. And I couldn't justify leaving him out. So Eddie's in for me at 80s. He's got five top 20 finishes in his last five starts. All aspects of his game seem to have fired at various points. His accuracy, his greens in regulation, if you're looking at old stats, got some progressive strokes and gained off the tee performances over the last couple of weeks. Seventh for strokes gained putting last week as well, which was an eye-catching stat for Eddie Pepperell. And if you look at how he's performed, he's twice finished top six, so got some decent course form to boot as well. So of the shorter prices, Eddie, Tommy Fleetwood and Shane Lowry. Now, I have got three longer prices, but I'll bring you boys in here to see who you fancy at sub 100-1. Barry, you got anyone you've backed at that kind of price?
I'm with you on Eddie for sure. He kind of picks himself. I mean, he's got five top 20s in a row. A sixth here 2 years ago, so It just makes all the sense in the world. So yeah, I'm there. Can't ignore it. I think he might have that little bit of extra motivation and gumption this week with the Live guys playing the tournament as well, to just to prove a point.
Exactly.
That kind of extra little 1-2% kind of focus and concentration could be the difference.
No, I absolutely agree. I think that's you know, if there's one player who's been particularly outspoken on Twitter in particular about the Liv situation, it's been Eddie. And the fact that there's so many of those Liv players who've turned up this week, it could just be that extra 1% or 5% that he needs to get himself really in contention and potentially winning this tournament, because I think he's got the ability to do that. So, yeah. Can't disagree whatsoever. So Eddie's in for you. Was there any other ones for you?
The Lowry situation, I don't know what to do. I mean, we've been watching him and following him. And like you said, I'm backing him for months. It seems like all the ingredients are there, but it's like he's forgot to set the oven to the right temperature to get the cake, you know, or some analogy like that. Listen, as much as our heads are, you know, scratching from it, he must be really trying to figure out what is the final little thing I need to get the win, because we can see that he's playing great golf. Obviously, he was very unlucky earlier in the year when the rain thundered in on the 18th hole and Straka was able to got the win there. So I think it should just be a matter of time for him. I'm just not sure I might back him this week because of a couple of others in the higher range of odds that I might just sprinkle my bets on instead.
Yeah, no, can see that. Can see that. Any from you at that kind of level, Steve?
Who, me? Oh, I've got too many to choose from. I like this idea of players playing well and coming here having played at a higher level and then just kind of swooping in at this mid price. Because you it's pretty sweet, isn't it, if you look at the modern winners here. 16-1 on Hatton. 28 on Billy Ho last year. We had Francesco Molinari at 22s and Alex Neron at 20-1. So you've got a 16-28-1 price point there, the last four or five winners.
Yeah.
Danny Willett was 66-1. Having shown signs of life, hitting his driver nicely, letting everyone down the outing before, coming to Wentworth, no one backing him, and he wins at 66s. Yeah. Typical Danny Willett. I took a close look at Willett, but his driving's still all over the place, and that's going to kill you around here.
Yeah.
So I also want players that have actually been driving the ball nicely recently. I'm going to have to, just on the price point, I've got concerns about his short game, but on the price point, I'm going to take Victor Hovland. This was a guy that was contending a couple of months ago for the Open Championship, and we're getting him at 20-1.
Yep.
So I'm going to have Hovland. Also with Hovland, I find very, very fascinating his three wins on the PGA Tour, all on Pass Barlam, but we won't go down that route. 20-under, 20-under, 23-under. And then he also had the BMW International Open victory last year on the DP World Tour at 19-under. So I think this is going to fit into his wheelhouse perfectly for scoring.
Yeah, yeah. That is bang on the winning total, I think.
Yeah. He also won the Hero World Challenger 18. So this kind of almost resort level scoring, but you're picking your way round and you can still amass 66s, 67s. I think that's Hovland territory. So I'm on Hovland. I'm going to ask Barry this one. I've got two LIV players that I'm very tempted on. Now, one of them's going to be one of the most hated figures on the golf course. Well, you say that, it's Wentworth, and we've been to Wentworth. We've been there for years. This idea of this LIV battle and people, you know, whenever I've been to Wentworth, it's the most graceful, appreciative crowd you'll ever meet. I mean, there's people there clapping people when they're getting triple bogeys. You don't see this American kind of vitriol and shouting and all that kind of jazz going on. I just want to take a view from you two, because I've got two livsters here that I'm absolutely itching to put money on.
Yeah. What
you think's going to happen.
It was only you abusing Andy Sullivan that year that was the exception to the rule that you've just described then.
Oh my God, I'll never forget that. Poor Andy Sullivan apparently had no idea what a fried egg was, and Steve informed him that his ball was in a fried egg. If he had a club in his hand, I'd say it would have been wrapped around Steve's neck. It was magic. Actually, do you know what, Steve? Just jumping back quickly to Hovland before we go move on to the LIV players discussion. I think that little bit of rain this week might help him play a bit more target golf and not be as exacting on his short game. Just that little bit of fire taken out of the greens and from around the edges could help him along the way. Good pick. Yeah.
I believe I picked him last year and he was mid pack, if that. I think he started terribly, which is another Hovland trait. But you know, the guy was 15th. What was he the other week? He was you know, 15th last time out of the Tour Championship. He's not playing bad golf, Victor Hovland. Bearing in mind, Joaquin Niemann was tied 9th and almost won the LIV event. Like, he got into the playoff, didn't he, with Dustin Johnson. You know, that's not a bad... He's not playing bad golf, Hovland. And his approach play was excellent at Eastlake. He was in the top 4 for strokes gain approach. So I think Hovland's a decent bet at 20-1. He'd win that and you'd go, I can't believe I wasn't on Victor Hovland at 20-1 to win that.
So onto the LIV players conversation and your thoughts about the fans being supportive. Like I can't guess or speak for anybody else, but from my perspective, does a lot of these guys have built up enormous credit in our lives to deserve our support of them or to warrant, or that's the reason we support them. Players like Sergio and so on, from, you know, Ryder Cup perspective and just from many good memories over the years. And I think as much as I dislike that what LIV has done to golf, it's kind of just blown up the whole ecosystem and made it very messy altogether. Just because these guys made one, quote unquote, from our perspective, mistake in jumping, it may or may not be a mistake. You know, the whole cancel culture where you make one error these days and you're just gone and everybody just like treats you like you're dirt and, you know, cast you out to the prison island or the desert it's just a bit mad for me. So like I can't hate on these guys for making their decision. I understand it. I don't necessarily agree with it, but I also can't speak to what I would do in that situation if presented with a lot of money that can provide an awful lot of security to you, your family, and whatever other you know, things you want to spend that money on. So, like, I'm not going to hate on these guys for doing it. It's just a bit messy that they're coming in back to the DP World Tour after going to a different tour. And there is the whole question of these guys are technically taking places of people who have committed their time, you know, their career to the DP World Tour and have stuck with that. I think that's where the gnarl and the little bit of undertones will be felt this week. So look, you know, I guess it's at some point I'm not, you know, going into a major, if one of the LIV guys is playing really well, I'm not going to not back him because he's jumped over to LIV. It's just, I think it's, for me, the whole LIV thing, it's just sad because it's made such a mess of the golfing landscape and it's very scrambled at the moment.
Yeah.
But it has affected good changes on the PGA Tour, so can't completely hate on it. It's just such a complicated thing to think about. But that's sort of my thoughts on the whole thing. And I would kind of agree with you, Steve. I think these guys who have built up many, many credits over many, many years will get support of the fans. You'll have one or two people who will definitely voice their displeasure at it, but you're never going to please everybody all of the time.
Interesting.
To your point, Barry, about players not getting into the field as a result, Richard Mansell's one case in point, and he was talking about it on Twitter yesterday where he's not in the field this week. But you look at Mansell, how he's been playing on the DP World Tour over the last few weeks and months. You know, in this kind of field, in this kind of scenario, you'd expect him to be right in there, but can't get a start. And, you know, in that situation, our place is being taken up by players who perhaps shouldn't be. It's a tough one, isn't it? But, yeah, I don't know. The whole conversation will continue to rumble on for some time yet, and we're nowhere near its finale, I don't think.
The one I've taken, I managed to get yesterday 60-1, 8 places each way, William Hill. Brandon Grace. 5th, 11th, 9th and 5th here. Form-wise. And his form over on LIV has been excellent. 3rd at the first at LIV event in London. Although it was in St Albans. 1st when he won at Portland. 24th at the Scottish Open, so that was a DP World Tour event. So at least he's gone into this kind of firing line already. This isn't the first time he's done it as a LIVster. Then 13th and 12th at Bedminster and Boston. And it's his greens and regulation numbers that are just grabbing me because we haven't got any strokes gained out of LIV. sixth in London, fifth for greens in regulation in Portland when he won, sixth and sixth for greens in regulation at Bedminster and Boston. And he's actually hitting fairways, which used to be Grace's problem. All of a sudden, he's driving the ball nicely. Fifth last week for total driving. Fourth for total accuracy. So that's fairways and green. So yeah, I'm on Brandon Grace at 60 to 1. I think that's a very, very strong price. Eight places each way. William Hill, I got that yesterday. The other one that's just screaming to back me, and this is a player of the utmost quality. I don't think if there is any, if there's any problems on the golf course, if there's one player here, I don't think it's going to ride him up, is Patrick Reed. Yeah, fourth here in 2019 and third in 2020. Mm. I can grab him right now on Bet365 each way extra, eight places each way at 45 to 1. That's a no-brainer bet for me. And Reed, you look at his numbers, he's actually finding lots of fairways at the moment. It's not his fairway, it's not his driving that's the problem. Actually, last week it was the putter for once. So yeah, I'm definitely going to go Hovland. I've backed already Grace, and I'm going to take right now Patrick Reed. Those are my three.
He's done well around here, Reed, hasn't he? It's tended to be his short game that's been pretty magical. You have to watch his game like a hawk, don't you? Because he does have these alternating spells of decent long game performance, and then it kind of reverts
can't
back
putt.
It reverts back to normal, and he's scrambling and putting incredibly well, but finding no fairways and greens. And the week that he puts anything like all of it together, he's capable of winning.
I can remember following him with you around Wentworth, and the guy was, I mean, this was pre-Live, but he was being treated as a hero, you know. And even then, people didn't like Patrick Reed, but not at Wentworth. People were appreciative that he was there, and he was supporting the DP World Tour at the time.
Yeah,
I dare.
Yeah, he's hitting a decent level of greens. The putter can be red hot, or last week it was relatively cold. But he's still, he was still top 25 for driving accuracy. Mm. So yeah, I'm going to just take Reed at that 45 to 1 price point.
Yeah.
Do you think the support or whatever for Patrick Reed really goes back to his Ryder Cup singles match against Rory?
A lot of it, I think.
I think that's the genesis. And then you just gloss over. A lot of people just kind of forget the fact that he's had a few indiscretions on tour. But they kind of like his fighting character on the course, and they just give him support because he's a battler.
Yeah, I think so. And I think Steve's right. The fact that he's come over and supported the DP World Tour, not just at Wentworth, but various other events over the years, has made him a more popular visitor than some others, and there's going to be some banter there, and I think it will be a more tetchy atmosphere than it has been in the past this week. But as to how much these guys get and how
that
much
might fire Reed up, it fires him up at Ryder Cups.
As you said, that if there's a player that could kind of feed off that, he won't necessarily put it to the back of his mind. Is someone who's more likely to take it and build on that. So, yeah, potentially. While we're in this bracket, you asked about the last player off my list. He does sit in this bracket. You mentioned him a minute ago, Steve, Danny Willett. And if I'd have been having a seventh, and I don't tend to go down the route of backing seven on an event, but if I'd have had a seventh, then it would have been Willett. Previous winner here, ninth last time out at the European Masters at Crans-Sorcière. Seventh not so long ago at the 3M Open over on the PGA Tour. So he's been showing some kind of little bits of form here and there. And he's that kind of player, as we've said countless times, who can just raise his game when it gets to a big event, a Rolex Series event, and suddenly pops up and wins. And he's at that price point, which we've always talked about, 66, 70 to 1. Often when you don't expect him to win, that's the kind of price point he comes in and wins at. So, if I'd have been having an extra one, then that would have been him. I, like you, have eyeballed his numbers, and that's the final off-putting piece where he's just driving. Not quite hit. Yeah, yeah. He's not quite doing it from off the tee.
But when I look back at when he did win, he'd actually, I think it was the performance before last, he finished in the top 5 or 10 for driving accuracy and for, you know, he was driving the ball nicely, or top 15 or something. You're not seeing that at the moment. He's spreading it all over the place.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. He's down in the bottom, you know, 50th, 60th kind of level, isn't he, in terms of his accuracy, which, unless he pulls that round dramatically, then that's not going to work round here, but we shall see. You never quite know with Danny.
Let's go to some of these bigger prices.
Yeah, yeah. There was a big question mark there for me with him. Anyway, yeah, three long shots for me. Firstly, Francesco Laporta, who I backed at 190-1. With 8 places each way, again with Bet365 each way extra. He's probably the most obvious one here because he was 16th at Crans Saucier, 4th last week. He co-led going into Sunday. He led by one going into Sunday here at Wentworth last year on debut, eventually finished 6th. So if you're looking for that traditional combination of current form and course form, he's got both of them there staring you in the face. And, you know, with conventional bookies, you can get 200-1 or thereabouts for fewer places, 190-1 with 8 places each way. I just couldn't resist it. 14th for strokes gained tee to green and 14th for strokes gained approach last week. 5th for strokes gained putting on the bent grass greens there in Denmark. There was absolutely no reason for me not to take a chance on Francesco Laporta this week. Also backed Joost Luiten, 200-1, 8 places each way. Now, that's a big price again for a 6-time tour winner. He's been drifting down the rankings for some time now. He's actually outside the top 500, which for a player who was inside the top 30 not that many years ago, that's a big fall from grace. But I don't think he's quite done yet. He's only 36, Joost, and when he's on his game, he's quite capable. And it's been more injuries and niggles and a bit of frustration with the game that's set him back, I think, over the last few weeks, months and years, potentially. He took a couple of months off recently to get his head straight. He got married in the meantime. Seems to be in a much better place now. He came back at the Czech Masters, 41st there, 23rd at Crans Saucier on his last start. So some quietly progressive form. And his long game seemed back on track. He's hitting greens. He's hitting fairways. 12th for strokes gained putting at Crans Saucier. Now, I've talked about this a number of times with Joost. He's a player that I think you can look through, read his numbers, and you can get a feeling as to whether he's going forwards or backwards. And if his putting numbers do start to progress, and 12th for strokes gained putting is particularly good for Joost Luiten, then that's something you've got to take notice of there. So given that he's also finished inside the top 12 twice here, bit of progressive form, some progressive stats, 200-1, that's good enough for me to take a punt on Joost. And the other one, much longer price, a player that I've kind of, he's not specifically on my post-it note, but in years gone by he would have been had I had one at the time. But listen, I'm taking a fresh view. I'm gonna give him a chance. 500-1, 7 places each way. Darren Fickard, the South African. Now, he's got 5 titles to his name on this DP World Tour, back in the European Tour days, as it was when he won his titles. Nothing since 2017, but perhaps he can take some inspiration from these guys who are, you know, winning after these big winless stretches, the Richie Ramses, the Ollie Wilsons over the last few weeks. Still winning on the Sunshine Tour, though. He's got a couple of wins since 2020. 4th recently on his home tour a few weeks back. He shot a 62 and a 63 on route to finishing 4th last month. 65 to open at Crans Saucier recently. 64 in the second round last week at Denmark. So he's shooting some nice low rounds here and there as well. Just not quite putting it all together. But if you look into his stats, driving the ball well. He was first for driving accuracy last week. He was second for putts per greens in regulation last week on the Denmark bent grass greens as well. And he's got a couple of top 8 finishes here. I mean, again, if you put it all together for a 500-1 shot, there's enough to like there to take a chance on him. So So yeah, they're my three long shots. Darren Fickard, Joost Luiten, Francesco Laporta, shorter prices, Eddie Pepperell, Tommy Fleetwood, and at the top, Shane Lowry. Any bombs from you, Barry? You must have one or two you've plucked out from there.
Barry loves a bomb.
He does.
I'm also on Laporta.
Yeah, it's a no-brainer, isn't it?
It really, yeah, just the bet made itself. I couldn't stop it happening. So,
just for the reference of listeners, in the strokes gained analysis that you can access on the website, he's fifth for strokes gained total, Laporta. And he's also ranking second for strokes gained ball striking. Yes, it's from four rounds, but clearly got on with the golf course last year.
He did. He did.
Sorry, Barry. Off you go.
No, you're fine. That's much more important to get in there. I'm going to stick with Helle Kilde. The guy's playing good. I got him at 125 to 18 places.
Mm.
Yeah. I would be annoyed at myself after him missing out by one shot last week to let him go now. So let's see. He's playing well. That was one of my criteria this week. So let's go. Yeah. Do you have any long ones, Steve? Or sorry, no. Paul, didn't mean to.
I do have now, though. Marcus,
you're about to back up my bet.
Why not? I managed to get a little bit of mistake back last week, and I know what will happen. I don't back him this week, and he'll be like in the top five, challenging Rory McIlroy and whoever at the top. So yeah, Helle Kilde. I think we can get bet 365 each way extra on him. Let's have a quick look. I haven't backed him. I'm going to.
You can, scan. Yeah. 125.10.
110 to 1 I'm getting at, 8 places each way.
This is the point, isn't it? You're getting a premium on a lot of these players over recent weeks. And you know, yes, it's because the player's at the top of the market, but if you've made a position or you've taken a stance that you know, a John Rahm or a Rory McIlroy or a Matt Fitzpatrick isn't going to win, you know, and that's quite a bold statement because each of the three could easily win if they're anywhere near the best. But if they don't, then these guys that are a bit further down that you're getting at 60, 80, 100, 150 to 1, whatever the price, there's chances there, particularly for him to get into a top eight position or thereabouts if you back him in these extra places. So an attractive betting heat, I would say.
Yeah,
Paul, for sure. Question for you. Ewan Ferguson has...
Oh, man.
He's out 80 to 1 now. He won three events ago, finished second last week. The guy's playing good golf. I know it's his first time in a tournament around here, but that's not immediately going to disqualify somebody. And with the course not playing as tricky as possible because of the bit of rain coming in, that might offset it a bit. I mean, 80 to 1, talk me out of it.
No, he's playing some great stuff. And, you know, we talked about him at the top of the show where he's, you know, he won in Qatar, won at Galgorham Castle. You know, save for two absolute bombs from Oliver Wilson last week, he would have won again. That would have been three wins. So, yeah, I'm not sure I can. There's a lot of players in that kind of bracket where you could, if you've got a strong conviction for them, then it's, you know, it's difficult to say no because... there's a case to be built about them. If you're talking about debutants, you know, we talked about Benny Am, but Laurie Cantor last year, he came very, very close to winning, and that was his debut. So it can be done. And I don't think Wentworth is anywhere near as tricked up as it was, you know, after the first set of Ernie Els changes. They've made it softer, they've made it more accessible. The players, even if they haven't played it before, they'll have they've seen it countless times on the TV. There won't be any surprises in terms of the holes there. So seeing someone like Ferguson get into the mix, it wouldn't shock me in the slightest, I don't think.
What about Kiradek Afibanrat? Second here last year. He's showing flashes over in the States. I know he did an interview after he started on fire at the Corn Ferry final last week and said that he's just going through. He's thousands of miles from home. He's on his own. No one speaks Thai over in America. I think that just the pressure of everything over there has got to him. But this is a good player, Kiradek.
Yeah, And he was in a good position before that interview came out, and then it kind of drifted away after that.
Drifted away, so. Yeah. So he hasn't got his playing privileges for next year on the PGA Tour, so he's going to need to be looking at other tours as an alternative.
You think a change of scenery might just trigger it?
Yeah, soft golf course. 125-1, I'm seeing.
And I'd say he's far more of a chance of encountering people who speak Thai around London than he would in the States. Oh, it's such a melting pot, London. So, option's surely available there. So,
I might throw a pound each way at Kiradec as well. Why not? Is that us, chaps? Are we done?
Yeah, I think we've covered 2/3 of the field. So, I think we're good.
Fantastic. For the first year in the ages, we won't be there. So, we're going to the Oval on Friday to watch the Test match. So, to all of those who are attending, I hope you have a wonderful time. It's a fantastic golf course, a great experience. Have an Estrella pint of for Paul and myself.
Yeah, let's hope the thunderstorms stay away on Thursday for those of you attending as well, so you get to see some action.
I hope your bets go well, chaps.
Yeah, best of luck, guys.
You too, guys.
We'll be back for the start of the new PGA Tour season next week. I hope your bets go well, listeners, and we'll see you soon. Cheerio.
If you like betting on golf, but everyone that you back misses the cut, get some experts involved with all the stats and the tips and so much more. Because it's the golf betting system. The golf betting system is the golf.